My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
You know, days like this, just keep fighting, keep going. You know what I'm saying? Everything is not going to be peaches and creams. You know what I'm saying?
He's special, just in terms of a leader. People respect him because of the man he is, and he's been a devoted guy to this game for a long time.
End zone, picked off, intercepted by Byard.
Great player, always running the ball. Like, that's my vivid memory of him, was just how many interceptions he would get.
Protection, and meanwhile, another interception.
City has embraced me, and I've embraced the city. The culture is great here. Guys are hungry. You can just feel the energy around the city. It's an exciting time.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. We're here live at Bears training camp. We're delighted to welcome in the starting safety, Kevin Byard, one of the few guys new to the team on defense this year. Fitting right in. And Kevin, welcome to the program. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing excellent. You know, getting ready for another padded practice training camp. We're kind of in the dog days, but it's exciting, man. You got to bring energy.
Well, you bring energy, and we just heard here on the open the description of you as a ball hawk. I don't know that there's a better term ever used for a defensive back than ball hawk. I mean, that is fantastic to hear. How would you define yourself? Do you like that as a introductory word to think of when we think of you as a starting safety with the Bears?
Yeah, I actually got the name Ball Hawk when I was in college. My defensive coordinator, my DB coach, called me Ball Hawk. I had a ton of picks in college, 19 career interceptions, set the record for my college as well. So, yeah, I would definitely look at myself as...
I thought in college you were the mayor of Murfreesboro.
So
that too?
That is correct. But so I actually got this name, the mayor of Murfreesboro. It was coined by Mike Keith, who's the announcer for the Tennessee Titans. It was one game my rookie year. I made a tackle, I made a play or something like that, and he just blurted out, "The mayor of Murfreesboro," and it just kind of stuck with me. So
that's where Middle Tennessee State is.
Exactly.
So you come here last offseason. You've been here for about 5 minutes, and it seemed like immediately you assumed a role of leadership, that you were very comfortable expressing yourself, and it seemed like you adapted quickly to who you were working with and the environment here. What allowed you to do that so seamlessly?
I think it's just me being myself. I think, you know, the resume that I come here to the Chicago Bears with, it kind of demands respect in a way. But I don't come in, and I definitely didn't come in like, hey, I'm taking over the room, I'm taking over this type of thing. We have a lot of great players already on this team. We already have an established leadership group, especially on the defensive side, with obviously starting with Tremaine, the middle linebacker, Jalen Johnson, and, guys like T.J. Edwards, Montez, and DeMarcus Walker. So me just coming in and just being myself with those guys on the team allows me to be myself. And, I think that's just – that's just who I am as a person, as a player. I just want to come in and try to give as much as I can and just be of service of everybody around me. And I think that's what leadership is. It's all about, you know, being of service.
We've been talking about, obviously, your secondary quite a bit. When we talk about the Bears defense, I think we both kind of have decided that your secondary can be in the top five in the league. Do you aspire to better than that? How good can this group be? It feels like you got a lot of young guys coming into their own at the right time and then veteran presence coming in as well.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. You know, I think at minimum be top five. You know, I think when you have a good secondary, you always have to have a mix of, just like you said, veteran leadership, but also a lot of younger guys coming into their own. Obviously, like Tyreek, Kyler, and Jaquan. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Jalen's been around the block a while. He finally got his recognition due, making his first Pro Bowl last year with the plays that he made. So just as a secondary, man, I think we're gelling really well together. Like I said, that is the expectation. But at the end of the day, we got to continue to work. You know, at the end of the day, during the season, it's going to be ups and downs. But I think as far as the secondary, we have to be, you know, one of the rocks of this team, one of the rocks of the defense, because we all know when you make a mistake on the back end, it's usually big plays and touchdowns.
From the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like it's a defense that is that hard to learn or grasp. But how would you describe Matt Eberflus's defense? And how interchangeable are the roles of the safeties? Because Jaquan Brisker and you have similar skill sets, and I wonder how interchangeable those responsibilities might be on a series-to-series basis or game-to-game.
Yeah, it could be as interchangeable as you want it to be, honestly. I know, you know, previous years, Jaquan and Bojack, they kind of had their own roles kind of in the defense. But with me and him, like you said, we're very similar in a lot of things we can do, so I want to be as interchangeable as possible. The defense is, I wouldn't say it's very hard, but it is complex in a way. There are a lot of different things we can do, and I think even just this year, we're trying to add a little bit more layers onto the defense, rather if it come with checks and things like that. So I'm excited. Matt Eberflus, obviously, it's crazy. He had brought in Nick Saban one day during our meetings, and it was just pretty cool to see him. But he's a secondary guy, too, as well. He sits in our meetings. We're always having discussions about, hey, if we have this call, what if we get this look? Can we check the defense to this? Can we check the defense to that? And he's very receptive as far as, like, you know, especially some of the veteran guys coming in with their opinions about things, because obviously we've seen a lot. So it's been exciting for sure.
What'd Saban have to say?
He didn't say much, but it was funny because, you know, Matt kind of said, or Coach Eberflus said that, you know, Matt Saban coached me way back in the day. And I'm just thinking, like, man, how long ago was this? And then Nick Saban was like, yeah, he was a hitter. And I kind of joked, and I made a joke. I was just like, yeah, usually if a coach says you a hitter, that probably means he wasn't that fast.
So. True. That's very true.
So I read somewhere that you said when you look at Brisker, he reminds you of a younger version of you, mm-hmm. that you see some of yourself in him. Explain that a little.
Yeah, so I remember when I was a younger player, my second year I made a Pro Bowl first team All-Pro. I had a really good year, and I had made the top 100 that year, and they had a clip of me and Jarvis Landry during the game when he was in Miami, and we were just talking like mad trash. I was talking crazy that game. And when I was younger, I just had this – I still have a chip on my shoulder, but I had an extremely large chip on my shoulder where I didn't care who was playing. It didn't matter what. I was just in a zone just talking crazy. And I think as a younger player, just that ultimate confidence of Brisker's a talker, and I love that about him. You get on the field, he just screams, and yeah, he just has so much energy. You know what I mean? I don't have that much energy like I used to anymore. I kind of got to – it takes me a little while to warm up during practice and things like that. But he just comes out just full of energy. His confidence is through the roof. He wants to be an all-pro, and I love that about him because when I was a younger player coming in, you have to go prove yourself, and you want to prove yourself. Even though this is an every-year-prove-yourself league, I just love his confidence. I love the energy that he brings. So it's going to be exciting to play with him this year.
But as a younger player, as an older player, you have been remarkably durable. You show up every – and you know the biggest ability, availability. Mm-hmm. What's the smoothie? Is it your breakfast secret? I heard you talking earlier this camp about what you eat and your routine and your ritual is responsible for you being on the field every Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I had my oatmeal this morning. This is sweet greens. This is actually something new. Like,
okay,
being here with the Bears in the facility, you know, the kitchen, they do a great job. And a lot of guys kind of put me on this, so I'm drinking this in the morning. But even just on the off day, you know, a lot of recovery. Coming here, hot tub, cold tub, sauna. I actually flew in one of my movement specialists from Tennessee. We did some work at the hotel, and then I got a massage later on that day and just some rest. So, and the good thing about, you know, being in a veteran and being in a leadership position, I have a lot of younger guys that's asking me about my routines and things like that. So I'm trying to share as much knowledge. I had a couple guys, Montez, Jared Everett, they came and see my movement specialist as well. So, and I also got some IVs. We had a guy from Tennessee fly up. He was stationed at Nate Davis' house, and we got some IVs. So, you know, I just think that as much as you can do, I always look at it as an investment, right? You invest your time in the things that will pay off in the end. So I invest my time in my body, and, you know, they usually always pay off in the end.
Do you pay attention to your Madden rating? Do you care about that at all? You have an 89, which would make you the 7th best safety in the NFL.
I used to care a lot, a whole lot. Not as much now.
You're not taunting anyone about your Madden rating versus theirs?
Yeah, that's a whole nother story right there. No, I'm not. You know, I've gotten to a point where in my career, even especially in my younger years, so like I told you, my second year, I had a really good year, made first team All-Pro, Pro Bowl. I remember, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I got into a spat with Deion Sanders because he was on TV. Obviously, he was on TV at the time, and he kind of said that he was giving his reins of the top two safeties in the league, and I think he named Harrison Smith and Tyrann Mathieu. And I was just, you know, young and got on Twitter and was like, how do you say they're the two best safeties and not name one of the first team All-Pro guys? And we got to a spat online. It kind of went viral. He actually blocked me because I think I had so many it was so many fans that kept tweeting him about me just over the years. He had blocked me for a while. I think I'm unblocked or whatever. But, nah, I don't really care as much because these are things that I have no control over. You know what I mean? Like, whether it's PFF ratings or it's Madden or if it's this ESPN thing, you know, I just think that, like, you know, you try to do what you can do. You know, you can look at it as a motivating factor. But other than that, I don't get discouraged by, you know, if my rating drops or if whatever list I'm on, I drop or I go up. You know, it's just something that's motivation. It's always good to be recognized. But, nah, we're not getting to no spats over over ratings. You know what I mean? Like,
what would you rather do, make a great interception down the field or light up a running back in the hole?
Interception all day. Don't get me wrong, I like to hit. I've had over 100 tackles, I think, the past two or three years. But, you know, you get paid by turnovers. You know, it's the same thing on as a pass rusher. You get paid to get sacks. Pressures is nice. Sometimes people do get paid off pressures and things like that. But you want to be able to turn the ball over. And that's something that I've made my calling card ever since I've been playing football. So it's something I like to continue to do.
Do you enjoy intimidating rookie quarterbacks with picks? It seems like your secondary has been winning quite a bit.
Yeah, it's very fun. We want to continue to challenge him for sure. And I think a good thing for him is learning early in training camp, early in his career, especially going against a good secondary day, which you can and cannot do. One thing right. that I've seen from him during training camp is his ability to throw on the run is special. You know, I think one of the only guys that I've seen since I've been in the league. Yeah, no, for real. One of the only guys that I think who I've seen be able to do that just as good was Josh Allen. Being wow. in Tennessee for so long, we played the Bills like almost every year. And Vrabel, every time we came in the film room before we played those guys, he would always say, do not let Josh Allen scramble to our left. Anytime he scrambles to his right, bad thing usually happens for the defense. Either touchdown, he's throwing it deep. He's very accurate. Caleb is very accurate. Doing the same thing. But even going the other way, he made a throw during practice to Keenan Allen on the sideline, and he just torqued his body. And he can throw from so many different platforms, arm angles is very special. But I think just him doing that, and because one time I almost picked up, I was out of bounds. I picked it up, but I was out of bounds. He was doing the same thing. But I think he's just learning what he can do. Sometimes you got to just throw the ball away. But he's getting a lot of great lessons early from this defense, and it's going to make him a way better player.
As a veteran, somebody who is savvy, who's been around the league, and you've seen rookie quarterbacks come in and make an impact, you've also been around a lot of veteran teammates. What is it about Caleb Williams' presence that makes him different?
You know, we would all talk about, you know, his abilities and things like that. I think it's the intangibles. So I give you a great example. This was literally just yesterday, last night, we did our walkthrough. And we finished the walkthrough, and, you know, Coach, he talked, and, you know, players usually break down. Usually a veteran breaks down. And Caleb wanted to jump into the middle to break it down. And usually, like, you know, as a rookie, he's like, oh, what does this guy got to say?
Right.
But, no, he honestly was just like, hey, first thing he says, he's like, hey, man, we're all grown men here, right, you know? as we're going through training camp, and we all use the hot tub, we all use the cold tub, we all use the bathroom and all the areas. He was like, hey, man, like, we're getting a little too sloppy. You know what I'm saying? We're leaving water bottles and towels and all type of things around, man. Like, these custodians have a lot that they have to – a lot of square footage they have to cover around this whole building. Let's try to help them out by cleaning up after ourselves. And that's just little things, man, because I just think that when you want to be a great player, you always focus on the little details. You know what I mean? Not even just the details of the play, but the details of everything around you, you know. It's this old video of Ed Reed was kind of talking about the year they won the Super Bowl, about how guys were – not picking up their towels after the showers. And he was just like, man, how are we going to be great if we can't pick up our towels? And it's just like little things like that just makes the guy special. Like I said, I think Bears fans are in for a treat for a little while with Caleb Williams for sure.
You know, we've been arguing about who is the best member of the secondary. Obviously, Jalen got paid, and you saw, you know, what he did last year. Stevenson seems to have gotten picked on because he's opposite a guy who eventually gets paid. You know, Kyler Gordon, I mean, that guy can do, like, gymnastic stuff. Like,
for sure.
I you see the guy.
Ballet and shoulder pads.
But he can jump over his own, like, he could do, a flip. Can you do that kind of stuff? It's unbelievable.
Of course not.
And we know Brisker's a tough kid. Who's the best member of the secondary? I mean, and feel free to include yourself in your event.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make too many comparisons about anything. But what I will say is, obviously, Jalen's special. He's a special – I mean, obviously, I kind of always admired his game from afar, and now just watching him up close and personal, he's a for-sure shutdown corner. And like you kind of say with Tyreek, he's going to get all those targets because Jalen's shutting things down. But you want to be the guy to get in all the targets because why you're going to get all the interceptions. And like you said, you want to be able to turn the ball over. You mentioned Kyler.
That's crazy.
I stretch right behind him in stretch lines. And I'll just be watching him like, bro, how can you do that? Like, he must have done gymnastics when he was younger because he's, like, incredibly flexible and obviously brisk, and I love his game. But when talking about who's the best, I mean, I feel like it's kind of relative, and I feel like it's kind of hard to say. I will obviously say that, obviously, Jalen deserves that recognition for sure. But, you know, I'm no slouch myself.
I know. You feel good about you.
Come on now.
Who did you want to be growing up?
As far as player or just
player, who did you want to be? You said Ed Reed. Was he the guy? Was somebody else the guy?
No, I had three. It was like, to me, like the holy trinity of safeties. You have Ed Reed, Brian Dawkins, Troy Polamalu. Those are the three guys that I admired, the three guys that I watched. So I started playing football. I was a safety. I mean, I was a quarterback when I first started playing football. I started to run track in high school. My coach thought I got really fast, and I was, you know, in the weight room gaining weight. He's like, man, I think you look really good back on them hashes. And I'm just like, okay, like, I'm just gonna do anything to help the team, or whatever. The first video I watched when I started playing, trying to get my mind right, I typed in YouTube, Brian Dawkins Weapon X. This is crazy motivational video Brian Dawkins just smacking people. But, yeah, those are the three trinities. Obviously, they're all kind of unique in what they did.
Yep.
Avery was a ball hawk. Brian Dawkins and Troy was the same thing, but Brian he just had a reckless abandonment and same thing for Troy Polamalu. So those are the three safes that I looked up to growing up for sure.
Kevin, thanks a ton. It's great meeting you. Really looking forward to a heck
great
of a year.
Thank you.
Take it easy on that poor kid, that young quarterback.
we'll try.
Don't break his confidence yet. All right. That's Kevin Byard. You're listening to Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host, alongside our own David Haw.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine, and he joins us now on The Score Hotline. Bruce, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. I always remember our dear friend Les Grobstein. He would call me with scores, and he'd go, Bruce, Cubs won. And then I'd say, yeah. He said, Reds 7. That was his favorite line, and I know we have a lot of trade talk. There's a lot of interest out there, but it just seems like this year, for some reason, Cub games have been more like Bear games. The mood swing of the fan base and people looking at them, looking at the game to game, and are they in it or are they not? And we're 110 games into the season.
So Bob Nightingale has reported that the White Sox believe Garrett Crochet will likely be moved today, and apparently there's not a lot of action on Luis Robert Jr., and he'll be staying. How badly would the potential trade of Crochet have been damaged by kind of the hurtful stuff, according to Chris Getz, that the agent said?
Well, I think it did do some damage, and more importantly, it gave other general managers some pause as far as whether or not this is the type of team guy you want to bring into a pennant race right now, and how it would impact the rest of the room, hearing that the guy is going to dictate how he's used after basically his first year in professional baseball as a starting pitcher. So with all that in mind, we can tell him that don't worry about Garrett Crochet. We can tell them, don't worry about Garrett Crochet. He's a terrific team guy. He's a terrific individual. He's a great competitor. You're going to have a wonderful player here for the rest of this year and beyond. But that's not all the response that gets received. And again, Bob is right. If you go to 670score.com, I wrote a story late last night about how Boston, Philadelphia, and Atlanta and a few other teams are still deeply in conversations with the White Sox about Crochet. So I expect them to get traded today as well.
So, Bruce, you were there when you asked the question, and Chris Getz responded by calling what the agents did and what Crochet did, complicit to that, as hurtful, and it was emotional to him. My question would be this. Is he able to remove that emotion from the equation when making the best decision for the White Sox future today, or are his feelings so hurt that he's more compelled to want to trade Garrett Crochet?
Yeah, I think his personal feelings with Crochet and their relationship was one thing. I think being the cold-hearted baseball executive you have to be this year, looking at players as players and understanding how they either fit or they don't fit on your team, I think that's a real test for a general manager. And I don't think it'll be any different than the way that he handled the Dylan Cease deal. If you remember correctly, guys, you know, that dragged on for months over the offseason until he was traded very late towards spring training last year. So with that in mind, I think he's going to insist on getting the best players possible, put his feelings aside, and not have any problem with that. The key is, can you afford to keep Garrett Crochet now for the last 2 months of the season, knowing that he's really not a part of your future? Or, you know, can you wait and get the right amount in the winter for him in a trade? All those things are certainly a new experience for Chris in his front office, and it's not the easiest thing to do in the world, but I think he's up to the task.
Can he get as bad a deal for Crochet as he managed for Eric Fetty?
Bad, meaning you've already given up on that?
Yeah. Okay. I just don't know why you had to trade three guys and get another team involved when Eric Fetty seemed worth whatever return they were getting, let alone... And I don't know what fan was ever going to get you, but, you know, Kopech might have gotten you one of those prospects. I just think that Eric Fetty had more value than being traded with two other guys.
Well, I would take a different look at it. I would say Fetty, you know, is a good pitcher. I think he's going to help somebody. I don't think he's anybody else's team number one or two at all. Okay, he might be a three or four somewhere else, and on it, these are good teams, right? So they already have good starting pitching. I agree with you on the Kopech. I think you're training a closer. I think everybody else in baseball, including the Dodgers, who happen to handle pitching probably better than anybody in baseball, they saw in Kopech somebody that you've already trained to be a back end pitcher and coming along really well, developing his breaking ball, establishing that earlier in counts with the cutter and the slider, and then moving forward and then throwing the fastball. I think they see him as a real jewel of this trade. And I think he's slowly going to work his way to the back end of the Dodger bullpen.
So, Bruce, let's talk Cubs for a second. Jameson Taillon pitched. It wasn't very good. Did the rumors distract him, do you think? Or was that just a bad night? And how active will they be today before the deadline?
Well, I think they'll be active, but I think the Taillon ship has probably sailed at this point. You know, I don't think one bad outing is going to change other people's mind about him. I think he still has tremendous value to them and other teams. But, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to give you what you really need to get for him. You're not in a position with 2 years of contract control at $16 million or $18 million a year in a position where you have to trade him. As a matter of fact, he, you know, if you think twice about it, he might be more value to you over the next 2 years than whatever you get back in a deal. But I think there'll be some trades. I think the Cubs desperately want to try to get a young catcher from somewhere. And whether or not there'll be another surprise deal from Jed Hoyer today or not, I mean, I don't think I don't think there was any rumor, not one, about Christopher Morel being involved in a trade. You know, your top RBI guy, your top home run guy, the one that people felt eventually would be hitting 35 or 40 home runs in the big leagues. So that was a shocker. Let's see if Jed has any more of that up his sleeve. But the primary need for this team going forward, whether you think they're in competition for the playoffs this year or not, is getting more catching. Amaya's come along a little bit with a stick over the last 2 weeks, but that's not enough. They need a more fortification there.
So I'm just curious, does the trade they made yesterday and whatever happens today mean that the 15-game losing streak is over? Are the Sox now ready to win?
Oh, no, I think they're going for the record. I mean,
What is that? What is that record?
It's 120 losses. Okay.
Oh, I know, so, but I'm saying how many straight games can they lose the rest of them the way they're playing?
I think potentially they can lose just about every game.
Yeah.
And I've never said that about a Chicago team. And I, you know, looking at, you know, some teams in the past, like you look at the Baltimore team in 2021, and you look at the Tiger team and in the late 90s when they lost 119 in the Mets and 62. It's hard to say that a team potentially can lose every game, but the White Sox can, because if Crochet's not pitching, whether he's with you or not, and not throwing innings, you lost Fetty, you lost your back end, your bullpen is in shambles. You have that game was won last night, and then it was lost because you didn't really have the bullpen to try to win a game. So they have the potential to lose that many games. But, Mike, here, I have a suggestion for you being the White Sox fan, okay?
Former.
Right. Grab a hold of another American League team to root for, and I can't think of anyone that would fit White Sox fans' idea more than the Kansas City Royals. Root for the Royals. Yeah. There's not that horrible history between the White Sox and the Royals. You have arguably the MVP of the American League this with a certain exception to Aaron Judge and Bobby Witt Jr., the best player in baseball right now. And,
right,
and
Bruce,
you saw that yesterday.
Let's get back to Crochet. If the teams involved, Red Sox, the Braves, the Phillies, and I think you mentioned the Dodgers, what are they giving the Sox in return? What is an acceptable return for a player of his stature and what he could mean to these teams' pennant race and pennant hopes?
In a good organization like the Dodgers, probably two of their top 10 and a third of their top 20 prospects. That's how it's got to go. And the Dodgers, if you notice, in the moves that they made, okay, have not given up any of their top 10 guys in their trades, and they have arguably the best young players 1 through 20 in baseball.
Great stuff, Bruce. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Bruce.
Guys, have a great day.
All right, you too.
That is Bruce Levine. I don't know. I'm not too worked up about it. Are you?
About what?
The possibility of getting a good return.
Well, I don't know, but if you don't get a good return, you shouldn't trade them, and you shouldn't be
that's what I'm saying.
Moved by emotion or hurt feelings. I think Garrett Crochet could be the cornerstone in a building block, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Build around pitching, and he's your best pitcher. I don't know what the race is to trade him to take advantage of the situation. Why not keep him and see what you got? I don't understand. I think we could talk ourselves into this being the idea they have to embrace and
no,
do it now.
But the thing is, you don't have to trade
you
people.
You don't.
I think they feel like they have to trade people.
I think they should have a meeting, and there should be an intervention, and he should say, okay, it makes more sense to keep him and to build around him.
All right, we're going to bring in our guy Mike Florio. A lot of quarterbacks getting paid and one quarterback not getting paid. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day! Day by day! We get better and better!
Get better and better!
Do we get beat?
Do we get beat?
Boom, beat!
What's up, Gator? Gator!
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us now on The Score Hotline. Michael, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you today?
Doing well.
We're out at Bears training camp, and we saw the owner, Kate Pye, earlier, and we didn't get a chance to quiz him about how he feels regarding the latest news from Governor Pritzker. The Tribune reporting that Pritzker's saying that there isn't a proposal on the table right now that would be acceptable to anyone in the legislature, and that they don't believe that anything can get done in the next year, which I think he told us it's $150 million along the line each year that they don't get going on the build.
I think it's as simple as this, guys. There's no real threat the team's going to move. And without a threat that the team's going to move, there's no reason for anyone to try extra hard to open up the public coffers, because the average citizen doesn't want to finance a stadium for a private sports team. That's a given. The question is, can you work the politicians with this idea that you don't want it to be on your resume that the team left? That's what I think gets a lot of the governors and the mayors and the county executives to move. They don't want to be the one that lost the team. Without that threat, there's really no urgency to give money to the Bears in Chicago.
But I think it's implied, Mike, because we're talking about this being on the lakefront, and if this is just referring to the lakefront project, then this would compel the Bears to move to Arlington Heights, where they own the land. It's less expensive. The payout from the public would be a smaller ask, and I do wonder if that is leading in. This is where we're headed because of the news from yesterday. This was a big fat no in 2024 for the lakefront. I don't know if it was a big fat no for Arlington Heights.
Well, I think that's right. And I think they're going to be looking to the other alternatives within the Chicago area to find a home, because, again, they're not going to move. I still think that the ever-increasing values of the teams will drag down the ability of any team to leverage taxpayer money when they are worth more and more and more all the time. Just sell a piece of the team to a private equity fund and pay for your stadium. And I think another argument that's going to be used inevitably, this $4.7 billion verdict that will become a $14.1 billion judgment that becomes $440 million per team, you're going to have opponents say, we're subsidizing your $440 million. And if you can afford the $440 million to buy your way out of civil liability, you can afford money to buy your own stadium.
You know, Mike, we're looking at kind of crazy prices going up, especially for quarterbacks. And I wonder, when you see what Jordan Love was paid, when you see Tua getting paid, what does that mean for the Cowboys? What does that mean for Dak Prescott? Is he better than those guys? Is he going to get more money than those guys? How do you weigh that?
Well, look, better doesn't matter. What matters are your specific circumstances. And he's got a ton of leverage over the Cowboys because they can't keep him from leaving in March. I think that's why the deal hasn't been done. The Cowboys don't have the hammer that most teams have when they're dealing with their highest paid players. We will just use the franchise tag on you if we can't work out a deal. Cowboys can't do it. So Dak can just say, I've got no urgency. I've been paid. He was, from 2020 through 2023, the number one player in the NFL in total cash flow received. It was Dak Prescott. So he's got his money. He can be coy. He can be patient. And he can let it play out. And if the Cowboys aren't going to give him what he wants, he can go to the open market and see what else is out there. And good agents have a knack for knowing what else is out there. But the numbers keep going up and up. The salary cap keeps going up and up. And Dak Prescott, I think, has the best chance to be the first guy to get $60 million per year.
Wow, that's amazing, really. So, Mike, Thursday night we're going to be in Canton, Bears and the Texans. First glimpse at the new kickoff rule. Rich Bisaccia said that he expects the league to make some amendments to the kickoff rule in the preseason or after the preseason. What might those be?
there isn't much they can do. You know, I looked into whether or not they could move the touchback point from the 30 back to the 35 as it was originally proposed, because I think a lot of teams are going to say, you know what, I'm just going to kick it out of the end zone. I'll give you the 30. I'll eliminate the risk of a long return. I'll eliminate the risk of losing my job because one long return turns into the loss that keeps me out of the playoffs. So I poked around whether or not that could be changed from the 30 back to the 35, and I was told no. No, you've got to get 24 owners to vote on any changes. Now, there may be some discretion that's been reserved by the league or the competition committee, but they got to be careful because certain things will require the owners to vote, and it takes 24 to get them on the same page. So I'm not sure how much can be changed. The thing yesterday about you can't lay the ball flat on the tee, that's a rule that was already on the books. That's not any change that's been made. So I'll be very interested to see what they can get away with by way of tweaking the rule without going back to the owners and asking for 24 of them to approve it.
Mike, you know, we're here at camp, and there's a debate. We'll find out the answer today as to whether or not they're going to start the quarterback on Thursday night in the first preseason game. They've been having little operational issues, you know, just kind of cadence calls. I think they jumped offside six times on Saturday, and we heard Caleb Williams say he'd like to start the game. He'd like to play a series, whatever. Do you take that into account when you're trying to figure out if you're going to play the guy, or are you only concerned with how the operation is running at your practice, not in a game?
I think any of the issues that need to be ironed out can be ironed out with the red jersey on and no risk of injury. I don't like the idea of putting an asset like Caleb Williams out on the field at any time for any reason, especially in that initial game, the extra preseason game. You still got three others. You can figure out how to work him in and get him ready for the season that way. I think it's Hall of Fame game, and I think it's evolved to the point where you don't see any of the key players out on the field. It was a shock a couple of years ago when the Raiders extensively used Josh Jacobs. That is the very, very rare exception. I think you keep Caleb Williams. Even as much as he wants to play, you keep him under wraps for this one.
Any impressions, Mike, of Caleb Williams from afar as you have watched him and heard him in the first week of training camp?
You know what? I didn't hear that question.
Any impressions of Caleb Williams from afar?
I haven't seen or heard anything yet that changes my mind that the guy can be a great quarterback. This is, as a practical matter, something that won't be determined until it's time to go play games in the regular season against real defenses at full speed. Will he continue the trajectory we've seen in college? Will he hit a ceiling? That's the great unknown for all of these guys, and the pressure is higher and the stakes are higher for everyone involved when you're talking about a quarterback taken first overall.
Great stuff, Mike, as always. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Yes.
That is Mike Florio. Interesting. 7 to score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We can't beat beat!
We can't beat
beat!
Won't
beat
beat! What's up? Game's
up! NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Mike Florio. And he joins us now on the Score Hotline. Michael, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you today?
Doing well.
We're out at Bears training camp, and we saw the owner, Kate Pye, earlier. And we didn't get a chance to quiz him about how he feels regarding the latest news from Governor Pritzker. The Tribune reporting that Pritzker's saying that there isn't a proposal on the table right now that would be acceptable to anyone in the legislature, and that they don't believe that anything can get done in the next year, which I think he told us it's $150 million along
the
line each year that they don't get going on the build.
I think it's as simple as this, guys. There's no real threat the team's going to move. And without a threat that the team's going to move, there's no reason for anyone to try extra hard to open up the public coffers, because the average citizen doesn't want to finance a stadium for a private sports team. That's a given. The question is, can you work the politicians with this idea that you don't want it to be on your resume that the team left? That's what I think gets a lot of the governors and the mayors and the county executives to move. They don't want to be the one that lost the team. Without that threat, there's really no urgency to give money to the Bears in Chicago.
But I think it's implied, Mike, because we're talking about this being on the lakefront. And if this is just referring to the lakefront project, then this would compel the Bears to move to Arlington Heights, where they own the land. It's less expensive. The payout from the public would be a smaller ask. And I do wonder if that is leading in, this is where we're headed because of the news from yesterday. This was a big fat no in 2024 for the lakefront. I don't know if it was a big fat no for Arlington Heights.
Well, I think that's right. And I think they're going to be looking to the other alternatives within the Chicago area to find a home, because, again, they're not going to move. I still think that the ever-increasing values of the teams will drag down the ability of any team to leverage taxpayer money when they are worth more and more and more all the time. Just sell a piece of the team to a private equity fund and pay for your stadium. And I think another argument that's going to be used inevitably, this $4.7 billion verdict that will become a $14.1 billion judgment that becomes $440 million per team, you're going to have opponents say, we're subsidizing your $440 million. And if you can afford the $440 million to buy your way out of civil liability, you can afford money to buy your own stadium.
You know, Mike, we're looking at kind of crazy prices going up, especially for quarterbacks. And I wonder, when you see what Jordan Love was paid, when you see Tua getting paid, what does that mean for the Cowboys? What does that mean for Dak Prescott? Is he better than those guys? Is he going to get more money than those guys? How do you weigh that?
Well, look, better doesn't matter. What matters are your specific circumstances. And he's got a ton of leverage over the Cowboys because they can't keep him from leaving in March. I think that's why the deal hasn't been done. The Cowboys don't have the hammer that most teams have when they're dealing with their highest paid players. We will just use the franchise tag on you if we can't work out a deal. Cowboys can't do it. So Dak can just say, I've got no urgency. I've been paid. He was, from 2020 through 2023, the number one player in the NFL in total cash flow received. It was Dak Prescott. So he's got his money. He can be coy. He can be patient. And he can let it play out. And if the Cowboys aren't going to give him what he wants, he can go to the open market and see what else is out there. And good agents have a knack for knowing what else is out there. But the numbers keep going up and up. The salary cap keeps going up and up. And Dak Prescott, I think, has the best chance to be the first guy to get $60 million per year.
Wow, that's amazing, really. So, Mike, Thursday night we're going to be in Canton, Bears and the Texans. First glimpse at the new kickoff rule. Rich Bisaccia said that he expects the league to make some amendments to the kickoff rule in the preseason or after the preseason. What might those be?
There isn't much they can do. You know, I looked into whether or not they could move the touchback point from the 30 back to the 35 as it was originally proposed, because I think a lot of teams are going to say, you know what, I'm just going to kick it out of the end zone. I'll give you the 30. I'll eliminate the risk of a long return. I'll eliminate the risk of losing my job because one long return turns into the loss that keeps me out of the playoffs. So I poked around whether or not that could be changed from the 30 back to the 35, and I was told no. No, you've got to get 24 owners to vote on any changes. Now, there may be some discretion that's been reserved by the league or the competition committee, but they got to be careful because certain things will require the owners to vote, and it takes 24 to get them on the same page. So I'm not sure how much can be changed. The thing yesterday about you can't lay the ball flat on the tee, that's a rule that was already on the books. That's not any change that's been made. So I'll be very interested to see what they can get away with by way of tweaking the rule without going back to the owners and asking for 24 of them to approve it.
Mike, you know, we're here at camp, and there's a debate. We'll find out the answer today as to whether or not they're going to start the quarterback on Thursday night in the first preseason game. They've been having little operational issues, you know, just kind of cadence calls. I think they jumped offside 6 times on Saturday, and we heard Caleb Williams say he'd like to start the game. He'd like to play a series, whatever. Do you take that into account when you're trying to figure out if you're going to play the guy, or are you only concerned with how the operation is running at your practice, not in a game?
I think any of the issues that need to be ironed out can be ironed out with the red jersey on and no risk of injury. I don't like the idea of putting an asset like Caleb Williams out on the field at any time for any reason, especially in that initial game, the extra preseason game. You still got 3 others. You can figure out how to work him in and get him ready for the season that way. I think this Hall of Fame game, and I think it's evolved to the point where you don't see any of the key players out on the field. It was a shock a couple of years ago when the Raiders extensively used Josh Jacobs. That is the very, very rare exception. I think you keep Caleb Williams. Even as much as he wants to play, you keep him under wraps for this one.
Any impressions, Mike, of Caleb Williams from afar as you have watched him and heard him in the first week of training camp?
You know what? I didn't hear that question.
Any impressions of Caleb Williams from afar?
I haven't seen or heard anything yet that changes my mind that the guy can be a great quarterback. This is, as a practical matter, something that won't be determined until it's time to go play games in the regular season against real defenses at full speed. Will he continue the trajectory we've seen in college? Will he hit a ceiling? That's the great unknown for all of these guys, and the pressure is higher and the stakes are higher for everyone involved when you're talking about a quarterback taken first overall.
Great stuff, Mike, as always. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Yes.
That is Mike Florio. Interesting.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.